Blog Talk Radio.
Trying to do it so that, you know, nobody
A GMO means absolutely nothing.
I'm not sure how long this is. This is Monsanto, a documentary on GMO.
Let's see if I get it. Oh, that's an hour long.
Oh, is it?
Yeah, that's an hour long.
I didn't know how long that was.
That's an hour, yeah.
Well, that might be worth someone watching. If
yeah,
they go to YouTube.
But yeah, it's on, what is it? I don't even know, YouTube.
YouTube, yeah.
Okay, Council on Foreign Relations. You know, I get so tired of these guys.
Don't you?
I really do. I mean, I get so sick of what's happening, you know, with the Fed and how they keep changing. You know, it's a revolving door, you know, and it just never gets any better. And it's always the same damn people, you know.
Yeah.
You know, and it's always Council on Foreign Relations people and, the, you know, New York Fed and, the, you know, all these, they just never change. It's all the same. And the Fed, and they constantly get worse and worse and worse. And, you know, it's just a horrible thing. But anyway. This is a little shorter version, but it's something I thought would be interesting because it's the truth about vaccinations.
Yep.
H1N1 flu, propaganda on CNN, evil pharmaceutical giants. Okay.
Let's listen to that.
All right. We'll play some of it because right now everybody's worried about the flu. But these damn things don't work.
I've just come across an astounding piece of propaganda. I mean, really, they don't even try anymore, right? The corporate media. they're just telling you what to do. It's not even a debate. There's no investigative journalism. There's no nothing anymore. But I'm going to share this with you and come back with some comments. And, of course, before I do, I want to put this up to let everybody know this is 100% educational and non-profit. I shouldn't even have to say that, but the assholes that run Google seem to have a lot of confusion over what constitutes fair use, motherfuckers. Anyway, pardon my language. Let's listen in here to the talk, talk about flu vaccinations. Whoa, get a look at this.
Welcome back to the Lead Live from Los Angeles in national news. In case that guy hacking in line in front of you or the co-worker who came to the office looking like an extra from The Walking Dead didn't give you a flu, we have reached the peak of flu season, and in some areas it is hitting hard and spreading fast. 10 children have already died from flu-related illnesses, and according to the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention, more than half the country now reports widespread flu activity. Now, while that's fairly normal for this time of year, in certain parts of Texas and in the Bay Area, overflow tents are being set up to deal with the growing number of flu patients. Flu is also more likely to affect young, healthy adults this time around. That's because the most common strain being spread is H1N1, also known as our old nemesis, the swine flu. Joining me now live from Atlanta is Dr. Ann Shookit. She's the director of the National Center for Immunization and Respiratory Diseases. Doctor, thanks for being here.
Wonderful.
Do we know why we're seeing more H1N1 cases this season compared to last?
No, it's one of the good questions there is about influenza. The strains change year to year, and this year is a big H1N1 year here in the U.S. In Europe, they're seeing more of H3, but we know that the majority of cases we're seeing are H1N1, and that affects people under 65 more than the elderly. So it's really important for people to know it's not too late to get vaccinated, and we know that people under 65 aren't as likely to get vaccinated as the elderly are.
Not too late, people. Come on. Get in your car, load your family, get your grandparents, get out and get vaccinated.
So remember, it isn't too late to protect yourself against flu this year.
Yeah, I feel the same way I do, which is, you know, it's a big joke. But H1N1 is not the virus that's getting hit this year. I mean, they've got more and more strains of everything. They're just not telling you. You know, and they invent stuff. Did you know that?
That wouldn't surprise me.
Inventing flu bugs all the time.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. And we know that. So it's like, we'll move on. Israel police to investigate expressions of joy at Sharon's death. That was really funny.
I thought that was the weirdest thing we ever read. Okay.
You know, because, you know, for those of you who didn't know, Ariel Sharon was the prime minister there for back in, the last days was...
It was about 8 years ago, yeah. Right?
And he died. He actually
wow,
died. Yeah, he died in January 06. And I reported that on my own site because it was Reuters claimed that that his two doctors cited his time of death is 1 p.m. Okay, mm-hmm. On January 7th, 2006. They actually said it before. The doctors confirmed. Then that same afternoon, that was all changed.
He was brought back,
to life.
Resurrection.
In a coma. Okay. Which he stayed in for 8 years. Now, who in the hell would keep a guy in a coma for 8 years, okay?
You have to figure there was money in it.
Yeah, there was either money in it, or the guy actually died, and they just kept his body on ice so they could bury it 8 years later, you know? And but the whole thing is a farce. And, you know, and Ariel Sharon was responsible, personally responsible, for killing 750. He took great pride in that. And said in a speech that he gave in front of the Likud that, you know, he was very, very proud that he was personally responsible for the death of 750 Palestinians, right? That he shot them or killed them somehow personally. So this is a great, great, great man of bullshit. Okay. Well, the Israeli Public Security Minister, Yitzhak Abanovich, instructed police on Sunday to probe public placards that have appeared proclaiming satisfaction and even joy at the death on Saturday of former Prime Minister Ariel Sharon. The notices were posted in several yeshivas, or religious academies, after Sharon's death Saturday. A message which appeared at the Torat HaChaim yeshiva in central Israel, which was evacuated from a Gaza settlement following Sharon's order to pull out, read a hearty Mazel Tov to Ariel Sharon upon his demise. The Time of Israel's reported Mazel Tov is a Jewish congratulation at birthdays and other significant events. So, hang on one second, a little more to this. Police have said that they will set up a team alongside representatives for a state attorney office and attorney general office and will decide upon further legal action where appropriate. This conduct is contemptible, and I will not stand for it. I view such criminal actions very severely, and I have asked police officials to handle the issue swiftly and professionally. All they said was Mazel Tov, right? So it's for freedom of speech in Israel.
Oh, there is no freedom in Israel.
There's no freedom in Israel at all. It's a Marxist state.
Uh-huh.
Marxist state.
And you better be a Jew, not a Christian.
You can't be anything but a Jew. However, Israeli law guarantees freedom of speech, and aside from cases of incitement to violence, it is not clear if there would be any legal grounds for such an investigation. Well, Sharon was a controversial leader, and his character in particular has policies gained him as many friends as enemies. In his earlier years, he was a decorated war general and championed Israeli settlement building. But later in his life, he had an ideological about-turn and decided to evacuate the Gaza Strip, as well as several Israeli settlements in the West Bank. Thousands of people have paid their last respects to Sharon as his body lay in state outside the Israeli parliament. Sharon died Saturday at age 85, having been in a coma from a stroke he suffered in 2006 when he was at the pinnacle of his political power. Okay, the Israeli president, Shimon Peres, said that Sharon was an outstanding man and an exceptional commander, and blah, blah, blah. And one of the reasons that he died, that they don't tell you about, is that he was under indictment at the time for...
I remember real estate fraud.
Real estate fraud.
And he had done something else that was... Wasn't he harassing women? Was he the one?
No, that was another guy.
He was the president.
But this guy was involved heavily with the bogus real estate deal. And then he was involved the genocide of the Palestinians he was responsible for.
Mm-hmm.
And that was coming down and haunting him as well. So, you know, he had just killed a whole bunch more. He went into a mosque and a temple, killed hundreds of people.
Yeah.
In Palestine, or actually Jerusalem or some sort. But this was a long time ago, folks. But the guy was a barbaric, miserable piece of work. And anyway,
he wanted control of that country.
Yeah, but it's odd that the movement that runs, the direction was quite different from Hamas. Sir President Simon and Sharon was an outstanding man and exceptional commander who moved his people with love and so on and so on. But the reaction was different from Hamas, the Palestinian movement that runs Gaza. We deal with the death of Sharon as an end of the crimes he committed against the Palestinian people, a spokesman for Hamas in Gaza said. MK Ork struck from the Nationalist Orthodox Jewish Home Party symbolized the schism that Sharon created in Jewish feelings with her comment on Facebook. The truth needs to be said, Struck wrote on her Facebook wall. Sharon was one of the great builders of the land of Israel and one of the great destroyers. It was he who knew how to defeat terror and who turned all of the southern Israel terror-stricken, she wrote in reference to the continuous rocket attacks from Gaza into southern Israeli since the Israeli withdrawal. We must also thank God for the fact that Sharon was taken from our public lives before he was able to bring to residents of Judea and Samaria the tragedy he brought to the residents of Gush Katif and around Gaza, she said. And Strzok's comments immediately provoked uproar, and she was forced later to issue an apology disguised as a clarification. She says, I didn't ask for him to get sick. I didn't hope his premiership would end that way, and I have no happiness for the way his life ended. But she insisted that his death saved Israel from a horrible decline. And Israel Justice Prime Minister Tipsy Levini said Strzok's remarks were a disgusting incitement and embarrassment of the Knesset. Yeah, well, the Knesset's a major embarrassment to itself, so let's go for that. This the place who, anyway. So, you know, it's really funny, and Sharon is dead. Mazel Tov, you know, thank God another monster is bit the dust. You know what I mean? Even though he bit the dust 8 years ago.
Yeah.
No,
better late than never.
I don't know why. It'll come out why it took him 8 years to die, you know, for them to say that he was dead. But who knows? This is an important little piece. It says, as it stands now, we have no one arguing against the government at FISA hearings. And this is on NSA reforms. It's a short, about 5 minute video, and I think you should hear it.
President Obama will address the nation on Friday when he's expected to announce reforms to the NSA and its controversial surveillance programs. In a new interview today, Senator John McCain said this should only be the beginning.
Let's face it, when one guy who works for a contractor is able to reveal all this information and supposedly there's much more that he hasn't, then there's something wrong with the system right there. Is there anybody that believes that this system is not broken in many respects? I think not.
Joining me now, Democratic Congressman Adam Schiff, member of the Intelligence Committee. Welcome. Nice to see you, sir.
You too. Thanks, Alex.
So let's possible changes here. Let's take a look at them, because the ones that have been reported so far would include extending privacy protections to non-U.S. citizens, creating a new job for the advocacy issues and privacy issues there, and perhaps most importantly, reforming telephone surveillance so that data is stored by the phone companies, not the NSA. You're the one sponsoring for the bill calling for that last one. Do you think that's going to be included in the president's reforms?
I certainly hope so. Several of us had a meeting with the president last week, and he kept his cards pretty close to the vest. But he's doing exactly the analysis that the American people should want the president to do, and that is going through each of those review panel recommendations, all 46 of them, and saying, okay, what is technologically feasible? What impact does it have in terms of protecting privacy? What costs are there, if any, in terms of our national security? So he's doing exactly the right analysis. So where he'll ultimately come down on that telephone metadata program, I certainly hope it will be a restructure where the government will cease to gather these millions and millions of records and instead let the communications providers hold on to their own data.
But the question there, why would the phone companies storing this data make a difference? Would they not just be something like a holding tank for the NSA, or would it be difficult to get that information on a case-by-case basis?
Well, it would be difficult to get the data. I think the government could still get the data in a timely way to protect the country. But these are records that the telephone companies keep themselves for their own business purposes, obviously in order to bill us for our calls and to make sure they have records if there's a dispute down the road. They already keep them for a certain period of time. The FCC, for example, requires them to do that. I think that the American people would feel more comfortable with private companies keeping their own data, banks keeping their own data, telephone companies keeping their own data, than the government vacuuming up all that information in those few cases, for those few cases where it actually needs to use it. So I think it is more respectful of the privacy interests of the public.
Now, one of these proposed reforms, sir, is a privacy advocate who would then argue in the FISA court. You know, this would seem like a lot of common sense to people, but as it stands now, there is no one arguing against the government in FISA hearings. So what kind of system do we have in place at the moment? Is it adequate?
I think it certainly can be improved, and a number of the FISA court judges that have left the court have now spoken out publicly and advocated for just this kind of an independent advocate. One thing I was heartened at this meeting at the White House, there seemed to be fairly broad agreement on this point that there should be some form of adversarial process. What now is at stake is, what is the model going to be? Is that advocate going to be part of the court itself? Is it going to be somebody appointed independently? Which I recommend because I think it would give the public more confidence that it truly is an adversarial process. But I think it will improve the quality of the opinions coming out of the court, and I think we're heading that direction.
Okay. I would like to ask you about some breaking news that we've been getting here about the White House and Tehran having announced that the Iran nuclear deal will go into effect on January 20th in terms of Iran beginning to eliminate its highly enriched uranium. It's going to allow in the U.N. inspectors. Also, the U.S. will ease up on some sanctions, not remove them, but just ease up on them. What's your reaction to that?
I think it's positive news. So we have this interim agreement reached, but in...
Okay. So anyway, that's interesting that, you know, with all the FISA stuff, nobody's advocating against the government.
No.
Okay, so there's nobody... Yes, it's just amazing.
It's just like a steamroller rolling rights.
Yeah, I mean, this guy...
We don't have any rights anymore.
No. This guy was named Adam Schiff, who was a Republican, Democrat, I forget what he was. But it's just like, man, you know, we got nobody fighting the cause up there for anything.
Not in that Congress.
No.
Who bought and sold the company.
This one was kind of good. This was kind of funny because, well, what people are planning is they're saying ban supply of water to the National Security Agency so they can't cool their servers in that huge billions of dollars place they're building. So let's look at this. This is kind of interesting. This is Russian TV, by the way.
Anything to stop the NSA's data collection is laughable. I mean, they might author some superficial bills with misleading names to try to save face, but let's be real here. They're probably not going to do anything remotely meaningful to stop the NSA. So we're going to have to think of other ways to fight their data collection, if that's what we're so inclined to do. And a group called the Off Now Coalition thinks they found a good way to do just that. They've drafted a piece of legislation called the Fourth Amendment Protection Act, which they are encouraging lawmakers to adopt in their own states. The bill would ban state and local governments from helping the NSA in any way, including through the delivery of natural resources, like water. You see, all those servers that house all that NSA data get very, very hot. They need to be cooled. And one way the NSA is trying to accomplish that is by using treated wastewater from different municipalities near their data storage centers. The NSA is in the process of making deals with these municipalities to build pump stations where wastewater from treatment plants can be pumped into their data storage centers as a cooling agent. The NSA is using these deals with the municipalities to feel so good about themselves, saying they'll save money, and they're being environmentally conscious. It's not like they're cooling their data storage centers with Evian. It's just wastewater from municipalities. These deals will save taxpayer dollars and be good for natural ecosystems. So now back to Off Now's Fourth Amendment Protection Act. if adopted by states, the bill would make it illegal for those municipalities to give the NSA that wastewater. Sure, it's kind of a backdoor way to stop the NSA's data collection. But we are talking about American politics here, so you gotta outsmart the rest by playing your own game, right? Of course, the NSA would probably find another way to cool their servers. Maybe through the tears of newborn puppies or something, I don't know. But Osnow's plan is a great way to throw up a roadblock to at least slow the NSA's data collection down, if not stop it altogether. And so far, they've already gotten the support of some politicians, which is great, because it means they're making headway in their goal of hanging the NSA's current water cooling plan out to dry. Tonight, let's talk about that by following me on Twitter at The Resident.
Okay. And that's a good idea. I mean, you got to fight them by chewing at their ankles.
Yeah.
You know, it's like, I don't know how else you can do it. You know? But you got to do it. There was an article that I wanted, a short piece that, on John Lennon that I wanted to, but I didn't know where you found that.
Oh, on this site?
Probably
on the previous day.
Okay. That's it. Because I thought that would be an interesting thing.
Mm-hmm.
What I'll do is let's go for a quick music break. And then
we'll
right
can
back.
Find that. Yeah.
Yeah, we'll be right back.
Peace out of them. Peace is big. War is big business, you know. They like war. I'm sure they keep them fat and happy. And I'm anti-war, so they're trying to keep me out, but I'll get in. Because they'll have to own up in public
if
they're against peace, you know.
Listen, if anything happens to Yoko, and if it would be an accident.
So if they're
not,
lone nuts, all these assassins throughout American history, what are they? Are they all part of this, a similar movement, different movements?
Well, it's hard to say. You know, they all, the ones in the 60s all had a common denominator except the Kennedy murders. But if you look at Malcolm X, if you look at Martin Luther King, and if you look at John Lennon, all of them were under heavy CIA surveillance when they were killed.
Mm-hmm.
And I, being a former Navy SEAL, understand that before you do an op, you do plenty of surveillance and plenty of intel work to make sure it goes correctly. And the real only common denominator to the whole thing is the CIA.
Anybody who sings about love and harmony and life is dangerous. Somebody who's thinking about death and killing and subduing.
He was making friends with a lot of people that our government wanted to put in jail.
He was a high-profile figure, so his activities were being monitored.
You think the CIA might have had Lenin killed?
Well, there's a good possibility because Mark David Chapman was very strange.
In the fall of 1980, Mark David Chapman would periodically slip out of bed in the middle of the night while his wife tried to sleep. In the living room of their Honolulu apartment, he would strip off his pajamas, burn candles, and play his old Beatles records. Over and over he chanted, "John Lennon must die, the phony must die," says the Catcher in the Rye.
If you read about how that killing took place, Lenin was under heavy CIA surveillance. Reagan had just won, and Lenin was making a huge comeback at the time, and they thought that he could galvanize the left because he was very liberal. And Chapman, if you look at his background, it's nothing like what the media told us about. The media told us he was infatuated with the Beatles, infatuated with John Lennon, and that's why he killed him. That's not true at all. In fact, he could have cared less about the Beatles. His actual favorite musician was Todd Rundgren, and he hated guns. And yet the night he killed Lennon, he dropped into a professional shooting position, put five rounds in Lennon that a drill instructor would be proud of, and then his most strange behavior was when he was done. He had three opportunities to escape. He could have either ran into Central Park, he could have got onto the subway a block away and disappeared, or he could have just disappeared on the Manhattan streets. Instead, he backed up into the shadows, dropped the gun, pulled out J.D. Salinger's Catcher in the Rye, and was reading it when the cops arrived.
Governor Ventura, you know, I hear that and I think, so why? Or how, more interestingly? I mean, do you think he wasn't deranged, or do you think that the CIA drugged
him? I think he very well could have been. You know, you know about the MK-Ultra program of mind control and all that. That's all documented in the 50s and 60s. There was a good chance, in my opinion, he was what you would call, quote-unquote, a Manchurian candidate.
Do you think that stuff works? Because I was never under the impression that they had successfully done that.
Well, I think that it absolutely could work if they have someone for over a year, because hypnosis is a very powerful thing.
And as night fell, he was left alone, except for the voices inside his head.
And the child was praying to the devil, and the adult was praying to the Lord. And the adult wants to go home. And the child, no, I want to kill it.
Society is run by insane people for insane objectives.
What can we, as the youth of Toronto, like, what can we do to try and help you?
Help me by helping yourselves, you know, and the militant revolutionaries. Ask them to show you one revolution that turned out to be what it promised militantly. That's take Russia, France, anywhere that had it. What they do is they smash the place down, then they build it up again, and the people that build it up hang on to it, and then they become the establishment. And you guys are going to be the establishment in a few years. It's not worth knocking it down because it's convenient to have the rooms and the machinery. The thing is to protest for protest non-violently. Violence begets violence, you know, and if you run around wild, you get smashed, and that's it, you know, that's the laws of the universe. And they've got all the weapons, they've got all the money, and they know how to fight violence because they've been doing it for thousands of years, suppressing us. And the only thing they don't know about is non-violence and humor. And there's many ways of promoting peace. Do everything for peace. Kiss for peace, or smile for peace, or go to school for peace, or don't go to school for peace. Whatever you do, just do it for peace. It's up to the people. You can't blame it on the government and say, they're doing this, they're going to put us into war. We put them there, and we allow it. You know, and we can change it. If we really want to change it, we can change it.
Default!
Thought it was wonderful because he came just like the United States and restrict all everything, especially the internet.
Yep.
I remember him saying that. I just couldn't believe. I mean, he was an American senator at the time.
Yeah. Let me see something. Fukushima harms commerce as Russia rejects radioactive Japanese cars.
Huh.
Yeah. I'm wondering how many imported Japanese cars we have here.
I wanted to mention that Russia rejected importing Japanese cars
because
they're full of radiation.
That's exactly what it says here.
Mm-hmm.
Officials in the United States astoundingly continue to deny that radiation levels originating from Fukushima pose a significant threat to American lives. Despite many troubling pieces of evidence, Russia has shown its willingness to refuse radiation-tainted goods by turning away 130 used cars originated from Japan.
Mm-hmm.
Over the course of the past year, Russia's Consumer Protection Agency blocked importation of vehicles as well as auto parts after testing due to concerns that they were contaminated with radioactivity. In 2013, Russia has banned 165 batches of contaminated goods from entering the country. They were mainly used cars and spare parts for vehicles. This is not the first time that contaminated water from Fukushima has impacted global trade or imports into Russia. Back in July 2012, Russia stopped nearly 300 Japanese cars at the port of Vladivostok that it considered to be contaminated by radioactivity. According to Gennady Onishenko, Russia's chief sanitary inspector and head of the EPA, who expresses worries about glowing Japanese autos. Glowing Japanese autos, yeah. According to Novosti reports, out tens of thousands of Japanese car imported each year for Russia's significant secondhand market. Dozens fail radiation inspections each month as Russian ports and are sent back. Some 112 batch lots were refused, including used cars, spare parts, watercraft, and specialized equipment. Since the disaster of Fukushima, 697 such items have been detected. 591 were banned from entrance, and a Russian customs official reportedly told RIA Novosti in August 2013. But we don't do anything. I mean, we're not turning back anything, it seems like, in the United States. The U.S. radiation monitoring is far below Russian standards. By contrast, U.S. regulatory agencies, including the FDA and the EPA, have consistently played down worries about radiation, even stooping to raising its own official radiation limits in order to avoid sounding alarms with the public over contamination. Though the U.S. Customs and Border Protection officially monitors all cargo vessels arriving from Japan, and the FDA claims that it routinely inspects Japanese fish, produce, and dairy products, no incident of contamination has ever been reported, casting doubt on regulatory vigilance. Isn't that interesting, Larry?
It is.
I mean, they haven't caught one, okay? Because they keep raising the rate, so that nobody, There is little evidence that used cars are being screened for radiation. So, Homeland Security officials told the New York Times in April 2011, shortly after the disaster, that it had found no radioactively contaminated seafood, auto parts, or electronics. The Natural Resources Defense Council and other environmental groups have charged that several EPA statements to the public were misleading, as the agency found elevated levels of radioactive cesium in milk and rainwater on the West Coast, yet claimed that fallout on U.S. soil did not amount to any level of concern. Scandalously, the EPA National Air and Radiation Environmental Laboratory made reassuring claims at the time of the Fukushima disaster in March 2011 that it was actively monitoring real-time air quality and detected no elevated levels of radiation. But these were clearly unqualified statements. An internal audit made public in 2012 revealed that some 20% of its 124 real-time monitors, the stations around the country and across U.S. territories, were broken, and further, that many of these functioning monitors were incapable of taking accurate measurements because the filters required by policy to be changed twice per week had gone anywhere from 2 to 10 months without being changed. Oh, my God. So the RFDA and radiation policies and everything are just so
ridiculous.
Bullshit. All right? They don't care, guys. I mean, it's part of the population.
Well, they don't. That's right.
Yeah, you take your iodine pills and stuff and, you know, and that's...
They don't even give you that.
No, you got to get them yourself. I mean, it's just, you know...
They don't want anything to interfere with commerce.
It really makes it depressed when you hear
that.
It
sure does.
Yeah. So, here's a little article. Some natural news. Take control of your life and don't eat cancer. You know? That's so much trouble. So much trouble around the world. In the United States, cancer statistically now strikes half of all men and a third of all women. Can you imagine that? Huh?
Yeah, I'm not surprised.
Half of all men and a third of all women?
Well, we are living longer, that's true.
Yeah, but cancer strikes half of all men?
Mm-hmm.
Those tough odds are compounded by the odds of surviving that cancer. Why is this happening, and what factors can improve our chances? The rise of diseases now typical of Western society are coincided, oddly enough, with the industrialization of the modern diet and food allergies, lactose intolerance, gluten intolerance, GRD, I don't know what that is, GERD, peptic ulcers, Crohn's disease, celiac disease, diabetes, obesity, irritable bowel syndrome, and ultimately cancer. How does our food supply contribute to this common threat of illness, debilitation, and early death? The answer is staring us in the face: chemicals. The Food and Drug Administration, which most Americans believe is in place to protect our food and guard our health, has instead allowed more than 70,000 chemicals to infiltrate our food supply. Many of these dangerous ingredients are outright toxins, and until we stop eating them, we are poisoning ourselves, undermining our health, and allowing cancer to enter our bodies. Authors, do you want to read part of this? Want to read part of this?
Yep, I will.
Would you?
I've got to put on my other glasses.
Well, author Sean David Cohen cuts through the myriad symptoms and labyrinth of technical information in the medical and academic literature. You can read an easily digestible guide to the harmful additives lurking in our food so you can stop eating them. In simple language, the colorful illustrations, "Don't eat cancer," provide prudent advice that you can put to use immediately to identify toxic ingredients hiding in processed food, beverages, gums, candy, and even cosmetics and cigarettes that are weakening your body and biting cancer every time they are consumed.
Learn how to read labels and then clean out your pantry and clean up your life so you can avoid adulterated additives and stop eating cancer. That is, stop putting harmful foods into your body that are only contributing to illness and early death. Instead, you could teach yourself to stay clear of the most dangerous ingredients and start living a revitalized life with a rich, toxin-free diet. Protect yourself, improve your health, and boost your energy. Armed with straightforward information about what cancer is, where it comes from, and how to impede its development. The importance of this information is all about the health and wellness of the end user, so it's designed as the ultimate layman's guide with very user-friendly language that clues you in on the most important FDA-approved poisons you and your family have likely never even heard of. Stop guessing how to eat healthy and start avoiding the chemicals that are known to disrupt normal cell behavior and ultimately bring down your immune system. Whether you know it or not, eating just a little bit of these ingredients every day is accumulating a toxic result. Don't Eat Cancer will teach you how not to be a victim in the kitchen, the grocery store, restaurants, and more. According to author Sean David Cohen, it's time to change the way that we look at cancer, as well as how to cure it. View it as a disciplined, active prevention plan, and the cure will follow. Even if you already have cancer, if you stop pouring poisons in, your own good cells will have a much better chance of fighting and surviving the bad ones. It's common sense. There are enough chemicals in common products to easily end your life in the next 10 to 20 years, Cohen writes. So there's no time to waste in getting up to speed in how to protect your body from the daily invasion of chemicals. Stop eating cancer already.
That's
his upcoming book.
Yeah, it will be released April 1st. Are we looking forward to that?
Be interesting.
Yeah, I'd like to have him on. Get him on now. It's interesting. Anyway, so don't eat cancer, for God's sakes. Huh?
Yeah.
Yeah. Jeez. I mean, gee, what is that? Just don't eat cancer. And I'm going to go to this thing here. There's so much. This is kind of an interesting little article. A very quick, but very, very real. Poor people, especially those of color, are worth nothing to corporations and private contractors if they are on the streets. However, in jails and prisons, however, they each can generate corporate revenue of $30,000 to $40,000 a year.
Ooh.
That was by Chris Hedges. Wrote that.
Amazing,
huh? Isn't that amazing?
And how are they doing that?
What do you mean?
How are they generating $30,000 to $40,000 a year?
Well, they're generating that money put through several things. Number one, you've got guards and payments and everything.
Oh, they're looking at it that way.
It's an industry.
Okay.
It's an industry.
Well, it's the prison industrial complex.
Right. Paid for by the taxpayer, right?
Mm-hmm.
The private industry and private contractors and stuff.
Oh, it's a disgrace.
Right.
And they don't train them to do anything.
And, of course, it's slave labor, too.
Mm-hmm.
It's also slave labor.
Yeah, a lot of, we had read a while back that a lot of American companies like Nike
and
others.
And a lot of major companies are
using prison labor in that. Instead of exporting their business, they were using at-home prison labor.
Yeah, for 25 cents an hour.
Mm-hmm.
Amazing. Now, Joseph Mengele, I don't know if you remember him. He was a Nazi war criminal who killed people as a doctor. And Joseph Mengele said, "The more we do to you, the less you seem to believe we are doing it." Isn't that something? That's true.
That's probably true.
The more people can't believe what they're doing to you, you know, to people. They just don't believe it. It's horrible. It's horrible.
Even when it's right in their face, they can't accept it.
Yeah, and it's just insane stuff. I'm sorry. It's totally crazy, insane. There's one more article here
that you found?
This is really ridiculous. But nevertheless. CDC is not legally required to tell the truth about anything.
They probably can't believe it.
Including vaccines. Yeah. That's the Center for Disease Control.
Huh.
So let's look at that one. Yeah. I thought that was an interesting article. Oh, no. All the good articles, they want it soon. Them out. Damn it. Can't get it. Sorry, folks. Page not found. Okay.
That's too bad.
Yeah, it's too bad because they were showing that the CDC isn't required to tell the truth about anything. There's no law that states they have to. That's too bad. But they take it down. They didn't want anybody to know it. You know what I mean? Obamacare's hidden penalty may wallop your wallet. Hmm. Yeah. Obama's hidden penalty that could wallop your wallet got health insurance through your employer, you might think you're off the hook for being smacked by Obamacare penalties. If we were talking about the individual mandate, that requires most Americans to obtain insurance or pay a federal penalty, you would be right, as long as your employer is in compliance with the Health Reform Act minimum benefits requirements. But there's a good chance that you will be affected financially by another consequence of Obamacare, and this hidden penalty can be even more painful to your wealth than the individual mandate levy. Consequences of the following law. Okay, what is the pervasive Obamacare hidden penalty? Higher deductibles. While technically a penalty means punishment for breaking the law, in this case, the penalty stems from insurers and employers that comply with the law, right? And so, you know, higher deductibles are going to kill you.
Yeah.
Okay. So, expect higher and higher and higher deductibles on all your Obamacare stuff. This is funny. It's getting colder because this is Obama's statement.
Mm-hmm.
It's getting colder because the earth is warming up. But our economy is getting better because more people are out of work. That doesn't make sense, but neither does what he's saying. It doesn't make sense. Let's see, what else can I play here? U.S. House of Representatives voted 109 times undermine environmental efforts in 2013. And that was pretty sick, don't you think, folks? And let's go here. Maybe the last one. Environmentally speaking, 2013 was a bad year for the House of Reps.
Mm-hmm.
With a message of new reports from Henry Waxman, ranking member of the Committee on Energy and Commerce, the report cataloged the 2013 environmental and energy votes of the House and 113th Congress, and found that in 1 year the House voted in favor of anti-environmental positions 109 times, a statistic that shows the 113th Congress is following close on the heels of 112, which was dubbed by Waxman and Ed Markey as the most anti-environmental House of Representatives in the history. All right, imagine that.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and it just goes on and on. Just the details, the crazy quotes. Say 51 times the House members voted to protect the interests of the oil and gas industry at the expense of environmental and human health. The House also voted to ramp up drilling on public lands, including passing a bill that would have imposed a $5,000 fee for citizens who want to protest a proposed drilling project, and made it much easier for oil and gas companies to obtain permits for drilling in public land. Can you imagine they wanted to impose a fee of $5,000 if you wanted to protest that, them drilling on public land?
And who was going to get the result of that? $5,000?
Well, it's a fee, a house. It's a federal fee. Okay? I mean, unbelievable. Federal tax, federal fee for protesting. And it's criminal. Numbers of times, 51 times the House members voted to protect the interest of oil and gas. 20 times House members voted to weaken the Clean Air Act. Okay? 27 times House members voted to cut clean energy and energy efficient funding. And 37 times the number of times House members voted to weaken the Clean Water Act and other regulatory efforts to improve water quality, including voting 3 times to block federal agencies from using their money to implement the national ocean policy. Oh, my God. The scale of environmental votes in the 113th Congress isn't totally surprising. 160 representatives from 113 Congress had accepted more than $55.5 million from the fossil fuel industry, and 56% of the Republican caucus in 213 House of Representatives denies the reality of climate change. Huh. Well, anyway, folks, that ends our show tonight, and I hope you enjoyed it. And sorry we start bringing a couple of articles. But join us tomorrow night when we have our friend Larry Dorman from Ask Me Union joining us right here, and we'll be talking about union issues. So
yeah, he hasn't been on for a whole month.
No.
So we'll hope to hear some interesting things from Larry tomorrow.
Yeah. So join us then, and we'll talk to you tomorrow night.
Yeah, good night, folks.
Good night, everyone.
Have a good night.
Laura, baby. in the quicksand stuff about me. Let's take my cookies. Sure he does. I'm going to take him on just a second. Yeah.